Today, I'm chatting with Anant Perry, who is an inner child expert and emotional mastery coach. Anant and I recently met at a retreat and connected deeply around our shared passion for reparenting and inner child work as methods for healing. If you're curious to learn more about this and how to create a greater window of tolerance within your nervous system to be with those uncomfortable feelings and to face your fears with greater ease, this week's episode is for you. Anant and I are diving into my personal experience with this and how her method can help you too. You're listening to the Reframing Neurodiversity Podcast, and I'm your host, Melissa Jackson. I help women with ADHD get to the root of their symptoms so they may begin healing and passing a new way down to their kids. I believe that by supporting women, we support and heal our kids too. Let's talk about it. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We are talking today to my friend, Anant Perry, who is an inner child expert and an emotional mastery coach, as well as founder of the training camp For the Soul. And I am so excited to dive into this conversation with her today. Anant, thank you so much for coming to hang out and to chat with me today. I'm just really looking forward to this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited as well.
Okay, so just so you have a little bit of a background on my listeners, essentially, it's a lot of women who have ADHD, or maybe they suspect they have ADHD, or relate to a lot of the experiences and symptoms that come up with that, that can show up even later in life with a lot of emotional dysregulation and overwhelm, and just trying to navigate that space as an adult woman, oftentimes with children who also are demonstrating symptoms. And I am so obsessed with getting to the root of supporting people. And I feel like our experience that we had together recently at that retreat in Tahoe really opened my eyes to another layer of healing for this community when it comes to reparenting and getting to the root of what's really causing a lot of our discomfort in our lives. And so I would just love to hear a little bit from you on what you do. What does it mean to be an inner child expert? Because I feel like all of that work is just so important for this population of people.
Yeah, thank you. Ooh, where to begin? I think the word inner child is thrown around a lot now, and a lot of people, it's still taboo. They don't really know, what does it mean? Do I just look at myself in the mirror and tell myself, I love you? And yes, that's part of it, but not necessarily. More importantly, the type of inner child work that I have been practicing and facilitating for years now is really the body and the mind working cohesively together, and seeing that inner child as your emotions, your energy, whatever you're feeling, whether it's excited, horny, happy, or it's, nervous, sad, angry, frustrated. Think of that as your inner child, the younger part of you, and learning how to validate and acknowledge whatever that inner child is experiencing, which means learning to validate and acknowledge what we are experiencing as human beings, because we are beings, not doings. And a lot of times, we get caught in the doing the busyness of life, or compartmentalizing what is okay to be, what's not okay to be. It's okay to be happy and horny. Give me that all day long. And it's not okay. There's something wrong if I am sad, if I am frustrated, if I'm upset. Mm. And what happens is when we judge it as something's wrong, we disconnect from it. We go into our mind. We start to overanalyze, try and figure out why we feel this way. How do I stop feeling this way? We start to go into control as opposed to just being present with ourselves.
Yeah.
Validating and acknowledging, imagining that little boy or little girl walking into your bedroom and saying, I feel dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. And what do they need? Do they need you to say, oh, what's wrong with you? Get out of the room.
Yeah.
If you're going to be like that, oh, you're happy? Okay, come in. And we do that with ourselves and we don't even realize it.
Yeah.
And so learning to validate, to accept, to acknowledge, and to hold that part of yourself, which means, and this is part of what I'm sure we'll get into with the experience that you had at the retreat, is like what it is to really hold that part of yourself through whatever it is that you are experiencing. So that to me is a big part of my inner child work methodology, as well as understanding that everything's learned.
Yeah.
By the time you're 7 years old, predominantly 90% is learned. And you learn it mainly from your caretakers, which for most of us is mom and dad. And you learn it by what you see, what you hear, and what you feel energetically from them, either how they make you feel or how they feel about themselves. And you either copy or you rebel.
Yeah.
And then you do the opposite. And even if a parent was absent and not in your life and you're only raised by your mom or only raised by your dad, there's a gap in learning and development. So how much of who we are today as adults is a function of the foundation of those first 7 years, the developmental needs that we had being met, or those developmental needs that we had being unmet, and therefore the survival strategies that came into place so that we can survive living in this body and world. So learning to uncover what we learned and understanding that it's not who you are, it's what you learned. And the good news is that if you learned it, you can unlearn it.
Yeah.
It's not a quick fix. There's stages healing and unlearning it and reparenting and learning to reparent and give ourselves what we needed and become emotionally resilient.
Yeah.
And therefore know that we can handle whatever life's going to give us in the future. Because it's not just about healing from the past. It's about being resilient enough to handle the challenges and opportunities for growth that will show up over time.
Yeah.
You and I are both old enough to know it doesn't stop.
It does not stop.
And can you meet it in those moments?
Yeah.
Can you be resilient enough to meet whatever it is and thrive through it?
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, if we're not self-aware of how did our caretakers show up for us in those first 7 years, like you said, we're often unconsciously parenting ourselves at whatever age in adulthood in the same way, right? So if our parents were dismissive, if our parents couldn't hold space for our feelings, if our parents only showed us love when the glossy, shiny parts of us were seen and we felt rejected in the messier, more uncomfortable feelings, I think we then tend to reject ourselves in the messiness, right? It's like we don't know how to meet ourselves there because no one ever showed us that. And subconsciously, we're judging that part of us, right? Which just makes us even more disconnected from our inner child and our true self.
Absolutely. Jen, it's a script.
Yeah.
And you inherited a script and your life is a movie. And there's roles that you therefore play based on that script. And there's roles that you cast. Like you notice the things that you're attracted to, the type of, you know, type of men or women that you're attracted to, or whatever you believe that you could have.
Or are familiar, feel familiar to your nervous system, even if it's unhealthy.
Exactly. And so as long as you are alive, the show must go on. And so you're going to keep playing the same script out, same roles, until you learn to unlearn it, to become the editor of that script and become, therefore, the creator or the co-creator with the universe of your life, as opposed to what most people are doing is surviving, is we're in survival. Mm. Our nervous system is in survival. Our thought patterns are in survival. Most people are focused on what they don't want. I just well, why are you afraid to commit to this person? Well, you know, my parents got divorced and I just don't want to end up that way. So I'm very cautious as to who I get into a relationship with. What do you hear in that? All survival language, what you don't want, as opposed to creation and belief that you could have something else, and saying, what I want is, you know, a healthy partnership. And so that's part of, you know, the journey of unlearning, is going from living in survival mentality, victim mentality, to knowing ourselves as free, resilient co-creators.
Yeah. Okay, I want to dive into a little bit of the experience I had with you recently at Danny Morrell's event, because part of my medicine and one of my core wounds is feeling unsafe to be seen. And it's something I'm really working through. And a lot of my challenge in recent years has been taking it from the mind to the body. You know, I've understood for a very long time. I've intellectualized my feelings. I've understood my trauma. I've understood attachment styles. I've done the learning, but now I'm in this space of integrating it, embodying it, right? And so you and I connected at the event, and I shared this with you, and we had that lovely dinner together, and you asked me to come on stage the next day to be seen and to work through your process, right? In front of, I don't even know how many people were there, 100+. And my nervous system was freaking out. I said yes to you, but because we'd had a 2-hour lovely dinner where I felt safe with you, had you been a stranger, my nervous system would have been like, no way. Even though what I desire most is to be seen authentically, right? And yet my nervous system has attributed that to danger because as a child, that was unsafe, right? So even though intellectually I know being authentic, being ourselves, letting people see the real us is how we create aligned lives that actually feel good and how we thrive. I understand it all, but my body physically was like, danger, danger, danger. But because I had that bridge with you, that baby step into, okay, I trust or not, I'm going to get on the stage. I was scared, but it wasn't so scary that I was frozen. So I took the action. I got on stage with you and you walked me through part of the process that you do with your clients. So do you want to speak to a little bit of what happened with us and how that works with moving through a legitimate fear that so many people have to be seen authentically, even though that's what they want most? But I don't really love the word self-sabotage, because I think sabotage, it's like a coping mechanism, you know, to protect ourselves, but we can prevent ourselves from experiencing the very things we desire the most because we've got unconscious patterns that are familiar to our nervous system running the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can call it sabotage. I think you could only call it sabotage when you're aware that something else is running the show and you now have the tools and you have a choice. So those of you listening, if you're like, I have all the tools, I'm aware that I'm doing this thing that I shouldn't be doing, and you're still doing it, that's sabotage.
Yeah,
but
like
otherwise,
that.
For the most part, it's survival. And I like to call it, like, everybody has two bodyguards that when you don't feel safe and you don't know how to show up for your inner child anymore, these bodyguards say, get in the back seat, we're taking the driver's seat on. And so many of us are living with our survival strategies, literally running and operating our life successfully in an area of life, this false sense of safety. But at some point, your soul just knows it's bankrupt. It knows that there's more available. So there are stages to healing, right? And the first stage is awareness and becoming aware of the beliefs that are there, the bodyguards, like, how do I feel safe? Do I go into being a pleaser, being a good girl, doing everything right, just shutting down and freezing and hiding? Do I endure? Do I control? Do I make sure everything is right and perfect before I do it? Right? These are all types of personality patterns, protectors, and uncovering all that. First and foremost, so that you could recognize, uh-oh, I'm not in the driver's seat anymore. I could totally see the pattern that just took over. And that is just the beginning, right? So a lot of times what you spoke into was I've had the awareness and the knowledge for years, but awareness and knowledge is not action and doesn't complete the healing cycle. What there needs to be is what's called stage two, which is acceptance. Acceptance of what you're experiencing. Again, picture little Melissa walking into the room and saying, I don't want to get on stage because I'm scared. And validating and acknowledging, meeting her where she's at, accepting that. And if you remember, you were on stage and you shared that and you were very nervous and all this energy came up for you. And we regulated you first. I was like, just breathe. Just know, like, you're okay. You can be calm in the water, even though the water seems chaotic right now. And then I asked you, I go, what would happen? I mean, a lot of times we stop at, and maybe you want to speak to your experience of realizing what was actually at the root of your fear of being seen.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we stop at that. Well, I just don't want to be seen. I'm scared of being seen. And we never really explore deeper. So do you want to share it? Do you remember?
Yeah, no, I remember. And it's weird because I don't know that I was consciously aware in that moment, but you prompted me in a way that it became just so clear that the fear of being seen was ultimately this fear of being alone, of being abandoned or rejected or judged for who I am authentically. And that was the fear that was taking over my nervous system. And I was so dysregulated. You helped me regulate and then I could get to that place. But ultimately, at the root of it was that fear of abandonment, of being alone.
Yeah, of being alone. So, you know, the prompt for those of you listening is explore a little deeper. Whatever is the top of mind, I'm afraid to be seen.
Yeah.
And, okay, what if you were? So follow that path. Mm-hmm. And if I was, it could go one of two ways. It could go great, but I don't really believe that. It could go bad and then people judge me and criticize me and laugh at me and they don't want to listen to me or be around me. Okay. And if that happened, then what?
Yeah.
I'd be alone and boom. So those were the prompts. That's how you got to that. And we needed to regulate you prior because it's like, you know how you need to warm up before you do a tough exercise or something. And I like to call it warming up before we surf the waves in the ocean of our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting on that wetsuit. It's making sure that we are working with our nervous system is really what it is. The initial response of your nervous system was the shock of the cold water, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
And, or meaning when, you know, our nervous system is always working for us. It's listening for safety or threat. And when it senses a threat, it does its job. It puts us into that sympathetic state, fight, flight, freeze, please. It goes into that overdrive and works to keep us safe. And so that was the initial response because you've programmed in there so much that it's not safe to be on stage and be seen. I don't know what to do with this. This is so uncomfortable. So your nervous system says, oh, this is danger. This is uncomfortable. I got you. And so we have to then regulate you a bit to transition to letting your nervous system know that this is actually safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to learn how to expand my nervous system's capacity in this way.
Yeah.
And so all I had you do was take some deep breaths, right? And repeat to yourself, I'm safe, and just continue. The breath is so powerful in that way to regulate us.
Mm-hmm.
And then the real work begins of starting to identify, okay, I feel alone. Where do I feel this? Or like, my biggest fear is being alone. The thing is that we have to feel the thing that we fear the most to not have it be something that our nervous system is protecting us from.
Yeah. An epiphany that came through for me that was really interesting was that was my fear, my unconscious fear of being alone. But the coping mechanism I had adapted of hiding was actually what was making me feel alone. Like that's what I was experiencing because I wasn't letting anyone in to see the real me, which made me feel alone, right? So it was just the irony in what I think is protecting me was actually perpetuating my biggest fear.
Yeah, it was huge. I remember you were like, yeah, it was such an epiphany.
It was an epiphany.
You're like, whew. And so whatever it is that we don't want to feel is something that if we don't want to feel it, then our nervous system is going to protect us from it. And if we learn to feel it, then we learn to expand our nervous system's capacity so that it's not foreign, it's not unfamiliar, it's not uncomfortable. The reason that we label certain emotions uncomfortable or unfamiliar is just because we haven't trained ourselves for that energy, that frequency. Yeah. And what's interesting is it's different for all people. Mm-hmm. For some people, they could be with chaos. They could be with big energy. And for some people, they can't be with joy. Mm. Joy, love, unfamiliar to them, uncomfortable for them. So it's not, you know, good emotions versus bad emotions. It's whatever you were programmed with, whatever was familiar. You growing up. You grew up in a household that was chaotic. You either said, I'm going to get used to this or I never want to feel this again. Mm-hmm. So we've desensitized ourselves to think that there's only things that are okay to feel and things that aren't okay to feel. And therefore, we put a lot of energy into our nervous system needing to always be in protective mode, in a parasympathetic state, in survival, overwhelmed with having to constantly protect us from our own energy, from parts of ourselves, that we wonder why we don't have capacity to be present in a meeting or show up for our family or accomplish a task at work. Why we say we have ADHD. Do you actually have that? Or is so much of your nervous system capacity being used right now to protect you from sensations, from emotion?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was so interesting for me to really witness firsthand how once I showed my nervous system that it was safe to be seen, it was like I could feel my capacity for that. What was so uncomfortable, I had zero capacity for it, expand. And then the next day, I was able to take the mic and share with the group about a very intimate experience and things I never would have been able to do. And it's like I can just watch that capacity, that tolerance for what was once unfamiliar, growing and growing, but only with the action, right? Only with showing my body it was safe. It's like I've been learning through books for years, but it's like my nervous system didn't care about more information. So much shifted for me in that small action. And that is how we truly change the way we feel and what we can experience and what we can create, right? And you talked something about that I would love to hear more about riding the waves of our emotions and your 90-second rule. I know that's something else you did with me that I think is really powerful. Can you share with listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah. Before I get into that, I'll give you a little bit more background on understanding why it is that even though you can consume and have all the right intentions and knowledge and all that, why it's not effective is because your nervous system responds in 0.2 seconds, 10 times faster than your mind. So in 2 seconds, it reaches your conscious awareness, your thought processes. But your nervous system's already been there for 10 times longer, 0.2 seconds. So logically, in your mind, you can make a decision of like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to tell myself all these things. But if that's not what's programmed into your nervous system as to what to do when this energy comes up, because every moment you are feeling, there's energy moving through you. Your emotions are just energy in motion. Mm-hmm. So everything is bringing up some way that your nervous system is responding to it. Mm-hmm. And if what's programmed in there is this isn't safe, then it's going to hijack your ability to be present or to fulfill on the thing that you told yourself of, I can do this. Shit, I failed at it again. why is that? And so we're trying too hard with our mind.
Yeah.
Instead of the natural brilliance and reflex of our nervous system. Just like, think about when you're driving a car and it's like how quick we can respond when someone brakes. It's like, that wasn't your mind responding. Right. Like, oh yeah. Shit, I should brake. It's that quick. Wait 2 seconds. And so learning to program it in there. And what that means is recognizing that there's a whole body here, not just the mind. And when you learn to be in your body again, and I think of it like getting in the ocean of your emotions. When you learn to feel safe, to cultivate safety, to actually get in the water, get back into your body, which for myself was something that I didn't do for 35 years.
Yeah.
Right? I lived in disconnected. I would dissociate from my body. I'd live in my mind, in my thoughts, in my imagination, trying to think my way through things. I grew up in a household where my mom's motto was think positive. And you're fine. You're okay. Always not realizing good intentions, mom, but not realizing she wasn't validating and acknowledging my experiences. She was gaslighting them. And so I never learned what to do when these emotions come up, except for tell myself I'm fine.
Yeah.
So I disconnect, I dissociate. I wouldn't get in the water. And so there's an ocean of emotions here. And I experienced a lot of ADHD growing as in high school, in elementary school, and all that, really struggling because I was so disconnected from all of myself. And so much of my energy was consumed with managing the dysregulation in my body and being in my head that I couldn't receive information. I couldn't be present.
Yeah, that was me too.
And so, and I think it's very common for those of us that have ADHD. We've just forgotten how to be in our body and really work with the wholeness of who we are.
Yeah.
So, you know, cultivating that safety through breath, getting in the water, and understanding that you don't control the current.
Mm-hmm.
What is the current right now? What is the current wave? What am I feeling right now? What is the emotion that's there right now? And instead of resisting it, like, I don't want to feel this way. And like saying, it's like being in the water and saying, and the wave is coming and saying, I didn't want this big of a wave. I wanted a small wave.
Totally.
The next thing you know it, it hits you in the face and you're, you know, you're drinking water. You're plummeted by it. And so we get to learn how to actually accept, validate, and acknowledge whatever the current emotion is, whatever the current wave is, and ride that wave.
Without rejecting it or judging it or resisting it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a study done by a Harvard-trained neuroscientist, Dr. Jill Bolt Taylor, that she said that you can move through an emotion in 90 seconds when you don't resist it, judge it, or run from it. Mm-hmm. Just like a wave, you know, it rises, it peaks, and then it recedes. About 90 seconds or so. And for those of you that are moms or dads out there, watch a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. If you validate and acknowledge what they're feeling in that moment, and you don't try and you don't tell them to stop yelling or stop crying or stop whatever, and you don't ask them questions like, what do you need? Why are you feeling that way? But instead, you just witness them with loving presence. Acknowledge, validate, set a timer. You'll see 90 seconds or less. Mm-hmm. And if it's more than 90 seconds, it's probably because they're feeling multiple layers of different emotions. Mm-hmm. So it could be 5 minutes, but you'll see it'll be like 5 different emotions you'll feel from them in their expression. But they haven't been desensitized yet. You want to learn how to feel a feeling all the way through, how to ride a wave? Watch a 3-year-old. It's a full body expression.
Yeah. And as parents, we often want to stop it because that's what was done to us, right? We're so uncomfortable with their big feelings because we're not comfortable with our own because our parents weren't comfortable with their own. So they weren't comfortable with ours. It's like this whole cycle, this whole pattern.
Yeah. This whole pattern where as a society, as human beings, we have forgotten how to feel a feeling. We intellectualize a feeling. We want to talk about our feeling. We judge our feelings. We numb our feelings. We do anything but actually express it. And then you hear me say, you can move through feeling in 90 seconds. And you're like, bullshit, 90 seconds. Been here. I've been feeling this. I remember Danny at the retreat said, he was like, there's always this, what was the feeling? This nervousness. It's always there. Or aloneness is always there. It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
Because your nervous system put you in a protective bubble. You told it that is danger. So it's there, but you're not actually
feeling it.
And if you're not feeling it, your nervous system's not metabolizing it, not learning it and digesting it. So it will linger longer.
For a lifetime if we never feel it.
For a lifetime. And so it's just because you're not actually feeling it. So we get to remember again how to express a feeling as opposed to suppress a feeling, which is all we've been doing is suppressing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you express it like a child expresses it. Full body. There's body language for that feeling. There's facial expression. There's some sound you emote because that's where what a kid does. What a child does when they're expressing a feeling, there's a combination of all three. So you're letting that feeling really be what takes up all your energy, all the space. It's like you're in the ocean. If you're a surfer and you're about to ride a wave, like your focus is just on that wave, nothing else. You're giving everything to being stable to ride it. Like all the focus is on merging with that wave, feeling that wave. So, you know, holding the stability of the surfboard and everything to be able to do it. And so what it looks like is really acting out with all of your senses that. So I always love to give the metaphor of imagine that you're an actor and you're going for an audition. And everybody that's walking in there for that audition has the exact same script.
Mm-hmm.
Like words are the same. Everybody's going out there and acting the same, you know, 2-minute script. The difference is you really marrying that energy, you acting it out. So if the role is like in your situation, Melissa, I'd like you to come and audition for someone who is lonely. So much so that we can mute the words that you're saying and still feel from you that she is lonely.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you had me do on stage.
That's exactly what I had you do. I had you act out. And it has to be an act. Mm-hmm. At first, because it's unfamiliar. You don't actually see it as natural to you, whereas some other things are natural. Mm-hmm. I don't have to tell you to act out being happy, let's say.
Right. Well, because that's appropriate. We've been conditioned what's appropriate to
for
say,
you.
What isn't for me.
Yeah, for you. There are people that being happy is uncomfortable to them. I remember there was a guy at a retreat because I had the whole group do this afterwards. That shared with me afterwards that what he chose was being happy because he never really lets himself like 90 seconds. Like maybe he lets himself feel it for like 2 seconds. Like, yeah, I'm happy. I had a great day.
And shut
down. Wow. Exactly.
Yeah.
So whatever it is you shut down. So it has to be an act. Like, yeah, be a little uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or not uncomfortable, but act it out.
Yeah. Watching how like children do it because they're organic in feeling and they haven't been conditioned that anything is unacceptable, right? It's the adults who are uncomfortable with it, but the kids are just being and expressing.
Yeah. So improvise, play. This is play. You're at an audition. And if I told you, you're going to get $1 million, you know, for this Oscar winning performance, go all out with it. And I set a timer for 90 seconds and I had you act out without using words, but just sound, body language, facial expression, the feeling of aloneness, letting it actually take up space.
Yeah.
And what's happening, 90 seconds is actually a long period of time.
When you're really feeling it, it's very long.
When you're acting it out and feeling it and being in it with all of your senses and your whole body.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing in that is you're programming your nervous system. It's like, think of your nervous system as a computer, as a software, and you're programming that data in so that next time this emotion arises, it knows what to do.
Yeah,
it's more familiar. It doesn't see it as a threat, and it'll metabolize it quickly. So quick, remember, 0.2 seconds, that it may not even get to your conscious mind where it takes away your presence. This was something, fear of losing my business when I went through a challenging time with it was something that I didn't realize for a good year and a half I was running from. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally did, I was like, oh, this is the thing that I need to feel. My biggest fear of losing it. And so I went into that fear. And now it's not that fear doesn't come up for me, you know, in moments of business, of, you know, things not a launch, not going the way that I want or whatever, or in preparation for something, for getting on a stage. It's not that it doesn't come up. It does. But it doesn't take my conscious presence away because it gets processed by my nervous system in less than 2 seconds.
So because you felt that feeling all the way through.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's not, you know, a lot of times we say, well, I don't ever want to feel this way again.
Right.
And it's actually, how do I feel this so much that my nervous system is trained for it? That I can be with that fear. You could be now. Now you could be with the feeling of aloneness and not have it stop you, not have it take reach your conscious mind, where then your mind says, uh-oh, like we probably shouldn't do this.
Mm-hmm. So it might come up, but then it passes and you can move through it because you've already allowed yourself to fully experience the feeling.
Yeah. And I imagine, and the thing is that your mind will take a little bit longer to catch up. I remember for about 6 months after that, there were still some challenging moments in my business. And I remember saying to myself, how am I so calm and chill and okay right now? And it's because the mind is looking for all the memories, all the past times of how I reacted versus now. I'm not reacting that way. And it's still getting used to the new way of being, of behaving in response to a feeling. So I imagine for you that very next day when you raised your hand and to share something and grab the mic where suddenly you're in the spotlight, that you're like, did I really just do that?
For sure.
You're like, who are you?
Totally. But I felt oddly calm. That was like, it was like my mind was like, I can't believe I'm raising my hand and doing this. I never do this. But my body didn't feel nervous. I just shared. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm 97. Go ahead.
97. I have noticed, like, since then, being home in the last few weeks, it's like I now am catching myself on how a feeling comes up and my old coping mechanisms to avoid. You know, it's like, I want to shut it down. I want to call that friend or distract myself with that thing or, you know, get on my phone and scroll or whatever. And it's having to, like, with my mind be like, oh, I'm okay now. Okay, feel like I have to consciously come into what is the sensation I'm actually feeling in my body and sort of reparent and walk myself through that process, because my habit is to, when the uncomfortable feeling comes up, to want to run from it.
Absolutely. There's what's called stages of learning. So the first stage is unconscious, incompetent. So I'm not even aware that I'm doing something that isn't serving me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's conscious, incompetent. Oh, shoot. Now I'm aware that I'm doing this thing. And then conscious, competent, which is where you're at, which is to actually show up the way that I want to, feeling my feelings instead of my old pattern of dissociating from it. I consciously have to make the effort to do that.
Yes.
But that's the integration. There's a period of integration of going from it needing to be something that you practice over and over again consciously to the last stage of learning, which is unconscious competence. Like, I don't even have to think about it anymore. It's just my new way of being. But there's a bridge to cross between those two, and it really takes the repetition of building that new muscle memory, that new relationship to feeling safe to be in the waters, to be in your body.
Yeah. And that is my personal goal. That's why I enrolled in your trauma-informed certification program, so I can get to that next step for myself and then bring it into my one-on-one work with the women that I work with. So can you tell us more about what do you offer? How could people get in touch with you? What are some things that might support people in getting their toe in the water when they're just like, this all sounds amazing, but it's a lot. Where do I begin?
Yeah, you want to get your toe in the water. I have a free guide on my website, trainingcampforthesoul.com, or if you find me through Instagram, it's a link in my bio. And it's to a cultivating safety meditation where I'm guiding you just to warm up and get that, warm up the muscles, so to speak, get that wetsuit on before you, so that you could get in the water, meaning all the practices to learn to work with your nervous system so that you can get back in your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to dip your toe in, that's a good place to start. Something to do once a day. I always tell people, like, oh, when should I do this meditation? I go, in a transition time. So if you're transitioning from a day of work to being with your family or taking care of the kids, putting them to bed, which sometimes is very stressful, to spending the rest of your evening with your partner, and you want to transition out of that energy into a new energy, it's a good time to bring it into practice. And when you practice that, what you're doing is you're learning again how to recognize when you're in your body and when you're not in your body, when you feel safe and when you don't feel safe. And so over a few weeks of doing it daily, you won't need the meditation anymore. And you won't necessarily need to transition anymore from a parasympathetic state to sympathetic state, because you'll notice it more throughout your day when you're operating disconnected from your body and your nervous system. And what happens is you'll learn to self-regulate in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, I've been on over 100 podcasts, and the first few that I'd be on, I was totally dysregulated and my body would be shaking and tremoring while I'd be talking.
Yeah.
And now I don't have to think about it. I know that I'm speaking more from being connected to my body.
Yeah.
I know that I'm taking time to breathe, that I'm slowing down. And so I don't get off this call and feel stressed. I'm not stressed right now. I'm connected. I'm able to speak from an embodied place. But that took training.
Sure.
My nervous system. So that's a good basic get your foot in the water start. It's free. Please enjoy it.
And as you're talking, I feel like that's might even be a good resource to use with kids too, right? I feel like transitions
absolutely
can be so hard for children, especially highly sensitive kiddos or ADHDers. And I don't know, as we're doing this stuff for ourselves as mothers, as women, I feel like modeling and then bringing our little ones into that experience is such a gift.
100%.
Yeah.
And it's not like intense breath or the practice is definitely something that you can do with your kids that if they're old enough, they could listen to, or you could walk them through it, or you could, you know, break it up into maybe a shorter version for them once you learn it, but 100%. And start with you, because
always
some of you think like my kid is the one that needs it. But if you're dysregulated, they're mirroring your dysregulation more. So no matter what, give yourself the gift. Start with you so that you have capacity to hold them, even when they are dysregulated, that you can be okay with that.
100%.
That you can learn to witness them in whatever, because at times they will be. Mm-hmm. They don't have, although they're still learning.
Mm-hmm.
And they're learning, how they're actually learning is by expressing. The best gift that you could give your kid is validate and acknowledge what they're feeling when they're feeling it. When you recognize they're in the ocean of an emotion, there's a wave that's coming. Just be their cheerleader from the shore. Cheerlead them on to ride that wave and come back to what I call the land of possibility, where they could now relax.
And so, resist that urge to try to fix it or squash it or make it go away.
Yeah. I mean, really think about you. The only person that could enter that water is them. They're in the ocean of their emotion. You're on the sand.
Yeah.
Are you really trying to scream to them all the way out there, what's wrong? What do you mean? or, you know, when we're trying to talk to a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old, what's wrong? And they get more annoyed with you. It's because you're trying to have a logical conversation with them. And their brain the logical part of their brain doesn't form until age 7.
Yeah.
And their brain isn't fully formed until they're early 20s.
Yeah.
Like, save yourself the hassle and the breath. Just set a timer for 90 seconds and love them through it. And if you can't do that, it's because you're not doing that for yourself. It's because you've been denying your inner child that.
Yeah.
How many kids you have? You have 2 kids. Well, guess what? Now you have a third. It's your inner child. Tend to that one first and notice how much more regulated your kids will be around you just because your nervous system is regulated.
For sure. I can attest to that because I originally started in this work trying to help children. And what I've come full circle to is how we help kids the most is by helping the adults in their lives, you know, because I know for me, when I started changing myself is when my own kids mirrored that back.
Yeah, they're mirroring, they're modeling, especially if they're younger than 7. But even if they're 15 or 20, they're still looking at you as the role model of what's possible for them when they become adults. Can, you know, seeing, you know, mom or dad do self-development work or grow through something that was challenging, they now can have that as a model to know that life isn't always going to be sunshine and rainbows once you're an adult and off on your own. And that when things get challenging, it's okay to grow through it and to seek professional help and, you know, do retreats and work with, you know, inner child experts and all that stuff.
And have the tools to ride the waves and not judge and reject ourselves for having what's supposed to happen in life, right? We're going to have those feelings. And so,
This is what's going to keep you. This is what's going to keep you in the driver's seat. Remember in the beginning of this, I shared about we all have these protectors. There's a great book by Dr. Stephen Kessler called The 5 Personality Patterns. It's available on Audible and Spotify if you want to hear it. Yes, I'm giving him a plug because it's been a game changer for me in the past 5 years, understanding what I call the bodyguards, the protectors, and really taking it even deeper into how it shows up with clients. So those of you that are listening right now that are professionals, are coaches or healers or therapists, and you work with clients and you want to understand them better, I have a freebie guide for you on my website as well of how to take what he talks about in the book and really apply it to supporting a client when you're working with them in a session. But going back to what I wanted to really share right now, well, I guess I wanted to share all that. So that's not true. But like, what's going to keep you in the driver's seat, meaning connected to your higher self and therefore making sure that you are in alignment with what you actually want to do and be in this life is all based on your ability to nurture that little boy or little girl, which means very simply to work with your nervous system and ride the waves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And unlearn what you learned from mom and dad and reparent yourself. That is going to keep you in the driver's seat. And those bodyguards, they have gifts. Mm-hmm. There's gifts. We're not always in the shadow of it. There's gifts to them. But you want the bodyguards in the backseat.
Yeah.
Where you're like, hey, this is the direction we're going. Mm-hmm. And when I need you, I put you to work. Very different than needing them for survival. It's I need you because there's superpowers. And you could all see it. You could see where, like for those of us that are, you know, ADHD or learned to dissociate from our bodies, we are super creative. We have the strong ability to connect to the spirit world and channel where a lot of times the artists and the creators of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are some of the gifts.
Absolutely.
Those of us that tend to feel like collapse and feel like we can't do it, like we're hopeless, and merge and feel dependent on others. When you heal that, we're the healers of the world. We have so much compassion and capacity and love to hold others now that we've learned to fill that void of not knowing how to nurture ourselves. Yeah. And so there are gifts that have come from our survival, but you can only really be in the gifts of it if you don't need it for survival.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so often the gifts are what we think are the challenges. We just haven't learned how to work with them or to leverage them in the right ways, you know?
Right. Because so much of our energy is we need you for safety and survival.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this was so powerful. Thank you so much, Anat, for taking the time to share your wisdom with us. And I'm going to drop in the show notes links to connect with you. And I just started your training program, so maybe we'll circle back in 6 months when I'm done and have another conversation, because this work is just so incredibly powerful. And I think specifically for this community, it just holds so much potential healing.
Yeah. You know, we've had these labels that we have found some solace and safety and like, oh, that explains it. I have ADHD or I have anxiety or I am depressed. And I want to free you even more from that, that those are just labels, limitations of the need for survival. Mm. And that you can become resilient, because I have. I wouldn't be on this call right now. I wouldn't have the business that I have right now if my patterns were still running the show.
Exactly.
There's no way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the people who have moved through it themselves and harnessed the tools in their own lives that are embodied in the work and then sharing the wisdom with others who are the most valuable people to work with. So thank you, Anat.
Yeah.
It was such a joy to talk to you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you so much for joining me. If you like this podcast, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and share it with a friend who might need it. And if you're curious to discover where you're at in your nervous system right now and would like tools to support yourself in whatever state you're in so you can create more safety in your body to feel more grounded and connected with yourself and others, I've created a free quiz that allows you to discover your current state right now and receive a practice with your results for immediate support. Check out the show notes to grab it. I cannot wait to chat with you next time.